This podcast is brought to you by Adidas. Same dogs, new threads. Head to huskyteamstore.com to check out the new collection. This podcast is sponsored by University Bookstore. Join the Pack Rewards and save 10% on Husky gear every day, even on game day. Join the Pack today at ubookstore.com.
The Daily, UW's student newspaper, has been around since 1891. And every edition, over 100 years worth of news, opinions, art, sports, science, wellness, etc., has been preserved. In this podcast, The Daily's editorial staff will explore how our paper has covered important historical, cultural, and social phenomena. Welcome to Into the Archives. 1961. 101 Dalmatians has premiered in Technicolor. Freedom riders are challenging segregation in the South, and Americans are terrified of Russian nukes. In November of 61, The Daily is running ads for Dick's Burgers, which cost 19 cents. In flipping through the yellowed pages of our archive newspapers, I really wanted to hone in on articles surrounding racial injustice or the Cold War, but I was getting really distracted. The Daily was running so many cigarette ads, and they're pretty awful.
This just looks like one of those, those slut-shaming, like, cartoons.
So it says a girl watcher's guide, and it's got this woman who's, like, sunning herself on the beach, and there's, like, these various dudes, and she's... It looks like she's just wearing a towel, like she's not even wearing a swimsuit or anything, and she's got some sunscreen, and also, like, very characteristically,
wow, this is really creepy.
Cigarette pack on her towel.
Also, I don't think the cartoonist knows anything about biology.
Proportions.
Yeah. This woman is not proportional. Her boob seems kind of, like, unattached from the rest of her body, which is a little weird.
And it says, lesson two, what about standards? Advanced students of girl watching never waste eyeball effort watching girls who are not beautiful. Standards must be kept high. But how do we judge whether a girl is worth watching? Although many strict academicians will shudder at our aesthetics, we must insist that a girl is beautiful if she is beautiful to you. Kind of like, that's the beauty of girl watching. Every girl is beautiful to someone. For example, many observers have posted about the bare-backed buxom, see above, has a weak chin. Yet none of these keen-eyed experts would deny that she's indeed an attractive specimen. Shit.
This is barely about cigarettes.
And speaking of standards, don't forget to keep your smoking standards high. Smoke Pall Mall. You know, as someone who grew up in an advertising household, I can tell you that from an ad perspective, that's just total horseshit, and it's really just a way to objectify women because, and I know that's not a revelation, but, like, if you actually, like, look at it from, like, some, like, alien perspective, it's like, this is just such bullshit. I don't know. I'm just kind of, like, reeling from reading that. Like, seriously, like, this is, you're right about girl watching to talk about cigarettes.
So, there's
Is there another iteration of this?
Mm-hmm.
I know this stuff shouldn't surprise me, knowing that it was, like, the 1960s, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you watch, like, Mad Men or any of those other period pieces, and you're like, oh, that can't be really real. And then you actually look back, and it's like...
So this is another iteration of the same Pall Mall ad campaign, if you want to read that.
Girl Watcher's Guide issue, or lesson three, because it's, like, all academic, right? Although we believe that the girl watching is all over bird watching, we feel that the two hobbies do share one important characteristic. They are both genteel. They both respect the rights of the watched. Oh, sure, they do. Seriously. A girl watcher who asks a beautiful stranger for her name and phone number is like a bird watcher who steals eggs. If the stranger happens to have a pack of Pall Malls, famous cigarettes, and you're dying for a good natural smoke, you may break this rule. Normally, the girl watcher's pleasure is warm, quiet, and internal. However, there are cases when a discovery is so dazzling, it must be shared. Such case is illustrated above. And again, you have what looks like a woman on skis in a marsh, and there's two guys sitting in a boat with some ducks around them, and she's wearing, like, they're all in, like, hunting gear, right? And, like, wintertime clothing, I think. And then she's on skis in the water in a bathing suit. And I really don't know where the Pall Malls fit in. She's not even smoking.
Well, anymore. So, and what the guys are like, one is watching her, and he nudges the other to get his attention.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what the lesson is about. Which is creepy. I feel like that ad is talking about consent.
Yeah, definitely.
They're like, oh, respect girls when you watch them. Except if they're really hot, then whatever.
And then below it has, I don't think this was another ad, but it says, why be an amateur? Join the American Society of Girl Watchers now. And you get, like, a free membership card if you go and sign up, which is just whack.
I don't know if that's real.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's, I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't put it past them. But this, like, this one, like, if the other one didn't make sense, this one doesn't make even more sense. Like, nothing about this is, like, cigarettes to me.
Mm-mm.
So. Is this also from the Pall Mall series?
No. These ones are called Lucky Puffers. Smoke Luckies.
So what you're telling me is that Pall Mall was not exclusively the sexist cigarette brand?
No, I guess not. This one is in the form of kind of like a comic strip where the cigarettes are kind of representing like people and they're talking to each other.
Does he have to walk on his hands at every party? The cigarette is asking another cigarette. And then, why do you keep looking at me like that, George? Asking... The cigarette asks a match who is standing next to him. And then there's a lucky strike box that says, let's step outside and have a smoke, baby. And then the other cigarette says, never go down there alone, Gladys. That's Fraternity Row. And so that's also pretty skeezy. Like, I mean, we know now that fraternities are kind of crap organizations and like cesspools for a lot of toxic masculinity, but even then the fact that the cigarette ad hints at it in the 1960s is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just really gross. And it also, like, what's really disturbing to me too, like more so than the other ads, is like they're basically making a rape joke here, and it's not subtle whatsoever. And if that's supposed to be humorous, like, it's like, were they thinking? Like,
it is a rape joke, yeah.
That's absolutely terrible.
So, can I read you what it says on the bottom?
Yeah.
Jeez. What happens on campus Saturday night? If you could peek into an average campus on Saturday night, you would see students planning a hunger strike and smoking Luckies, ironing their Sunday suits and smoking Luckies, playing dominoes and smoking Luckies. College students smoke Luckies all the time, and more of them than any other regular cigarette. If you go to college, you should smoke Luckies. It's expected of you.
And so it also seems like to me that they're insinuating, like, oh, if you go to college and you're in a fraternity, you should also be abusing and assaulting women as well. Like, that kind of, like, oh, it's expected of you. It's like, this is just what you do at college.
Yeah.
God.
It's like peer pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know, like, I mean, all ads are peer pressure, totally.
I mean, it's not like they're peer pressuring you to buy, like, the newest TV or something. Like, you're talking about something that's going to kill you, and it also props itself up on the basis of sexism and violence. So,
zoinks. Do you wanna read this headline that was printed on the same edition of the Daily as that ad?
Cancer again linked to smoking. Yeah, that's really good.
This podcast is also brought to you by Global Innovation Exchange. Are you ready to lead the development of innovative solutions for connected devices or robotics? The UDEM Master of Science and Technology Innovation, MSTI, offered by the Global Innovation Exchange, teaches the skills needed to go from concept to development and onto market. GAX is a new model of experiential education founded by the UW, Tsinghua University, and Microsoft. Work alongside industry sponsors to get hands-on experience. Courses are focused in the areas of design thinking, technology development, and entrepreneurship. Learn more at our next info session on October 3rd at 6 p.m. at the UW Allen Library Auditorium, and explore our cutting-edge space on December 5th at 5:20 p.m. at the Global Innovation Exchange in Bellevue. Learn more and sign up at gixnetwork.org. GIX, design, build, launch.
Besides the ads, the Daily is also covering some intense political issues. Martin Luther King is coming to campus to discuss desegregation, and in the same month, JFK is scheduled to give a speech to students and faculty. The space race and the Cold War are revving up, and although those issues seem far away, they're still somehow impacting UW's campus. Here's one headline we ran in November.
Regents OK Fallout Shelter for New Dorm. Oh my gosh. By Diana Luke. A fallout shelter will be built into the third unit of McCarty Hall, an 800-unit men's and women's dormitory. McCarty. The decision was made by the Board of Regents in their meeting last Friday to provide the shelters. Regents approved a change in specifications of a basement of a proposed dormitory. The new specifications provide for strengthening of the walls and ceiling of the basement in conformity with civil defense requirements for fallout shelters. Oh my gosh. The shelter will cost $31,000 in addition to, oh my, that's a big number, $4,600,000 allocated for the dormitory itself. Wow. That's pretty crazy.
that was like even more, you know, back then.
I know. That's like, wow. A fallout shelter for a dorm. That's pretty, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I would be terrified.
Yeah.
If your parents were like, oh, like, what dorm are you moving into, honey, freshman year? And you were like,
the one with the fallout shelter. Yeah, they just built it. We're going to be super safe. I promise.
Even though those were totally, like, bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. But, like,
imagine if you were an out-of-state student and you were, like, you know, from the Midwest or somewhere, and then you were moving to the West Coast where there was more fear about atomic bombs.
Yeah.
The new fallout shelter and our coverage of it was met with an angry letter to the editor by a UW student. Its headline read, "New fallout shelter, not educational."
To the editor, it seems on Friday last, the Board of Regents took a gigantic step forward into the atomic age when they voted to put a fallout shelter into the new co-ed residence hall to be built on campus. The shelter is being built for a slight increase of original cost of $30,000. And is going to protect approximately 700 students, 2.7% of those attending the UW. Now, I'm not saying that I don't believe in fallout shelters, but I do not think that it is the university's responsibility to protect students from nuclear attack. When the legislature appropriates money to the school, I'm sure that it doesn't plan on it being spent for shelters, but rather for educational purposes. Likewise, when students pay tuition and residence hall fees, they expect their money to be spent for educational costs. The only thing educational I can see about this proposed shelter is to allow the engineering classes to take a field trip to the site to watch the cement being poured, or perhaps a field trip by some English classes to see an actual farce. Wow, that's, yeah. I definitely agree with him, though, that, like, it seems like such a weird thing for the university to do. I don't know. And he's right. Like, there's nothing educational about it. Like. Mm.
And, like, I think it is a university's responsibility to keep its kids safe, sure. Yeah. But when he said this would fit 2.7% of the kids going here,
yeah,
it's like, shit, like, how do you decide?
Yeah, well, just making something that could protect that small, like, it just seems like a PR move or a move to, like, save face in some way or, like, get people to come because it's like, look, we're protecting our students.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would kind of be my reaction, too. And, like, I don't know if it's the university's responsibility to protect students from, like, international threats.
Yeah. Like, I guess I didn't really think of it that way.
Like, of course, if there's a protest or a rally or violence in that sort of capacity, I think it's the university's responsibility to be accountable for that because that's something they can definitely control. But, mm-hmm. like, if someone drops a bomb on Seattle, like, I think that's more on the city and the state, you know, creating spaces so people can be safe, mm-hmm. more so than the university.
It's even just insane that they would spend any amount of money, on this thing where it's like, you're going to protect 700 students. And if this happens, the entire state is gone.
Yeah.
The whole state is gone.
Yeah.
Which is crazy that you could, like, in, you know, good faith, actually build this thing and think, oh, this is gonna help people.
Yeah, even like on today's campus, like if one of the dorms had one of these and none of the other ones had, questions would arise and be like, well, why aren't you building them for the other dorms?
Mm-hmm.
Or what about for your students that are off campus? Or what happens if it happens during like the normal like school day? Like, mm-hmm. do you build it into every hall? Like, why just one dorm that you're just making. That just seems like a weird decision.
Actually, you know what it reminds me of? Like earthquake-proofing buildings and how so many of our buildings are not equipped, you know, to handle an earthquake. And really, we're just waiting for one to happen.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And I think, like, when you look at other cities, like, I'll go back to San Francisco, like, all of those buildings are prepared for earthquakes because it's right on the San Andreas Fault. Whereas, like, the recent earthquake we had here, what was it, in Monroe?
Yeah.
And it was, like, 4.6.
And people could feel it in Seattle.
Yeah, you could feel it, but it wasn't anything, like, huge. And that's, if one huge one hits, one, a big enough earthquake could cause Rainier to erupt, it would be really bad.
Yeah.
And then not to mention, like, maybe tsunamis or other kind of disasters coming with it. So, like, I think there's definitely a, I don't know how prepared UW is for an event like that.
But that also just seems like, you know, if we're, what do they call it, retrofitting or retrograding a building and making it earthquake proof, it kind of seems like the same situation where we're like, oh, we're putting money into this to, like, you know, make it safe if there's a massive earthquake, when in reality, like, there's going to be a tsunami. Like, people are going to die.
Rainier's going to erupt. There's going to be soot in the air.
It just seems like we're just trying to, like, not think about all those horrible things that are going to happen.
Although the threat of nuclear war loomed above them, UW students actually had bigger things on their mind in 1961. Racism, for one. Dr. Martin Luther King had just led major protests against segregated buses in Alabama and Mississippi. Now he was on his way to the UW.
Wait, the Fair Visitors will reside in Terry Hall? Or
no.
Wait, what?
The one with the big MLK photo on it.
Oh, sorry. I didn't see the one below it, sorry. Southern Negro Leader to Talk on Integration by Carol Vertrees.
Yeah.
I mean, it's racist and all, but it's also doubly infuriating because, oh, like, Southern Leader. It's like, I think Martin Luther King is a bit more than that. And, like, it also does a really good job of just undermining the impact that he had.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, like...
And I was thinking, like, oh, maybe in 61 not everybody knew his name. But then I was like, no.
You're talking about a national figure who made radical change like we haven't seen in many other circles. So to just be like Southern Leader, it's like, oh, sure. Like, that's just bullshit.
Yeah.
Dr. King's speech was well received. And racial injustice was a hot topic on campus. In November of 61, the Daily ran some guest editorials written by students with questionable arguments against segregation.
Roommate Feels Prejudice by Lloyd Huck, Senior, General Business. I have a feeling that it was a guest editorial, someone who was not a staff writer. So, quote, "It is a nice apartment. I'm sure you will like it. Come over tomorrow at 3 o'clock to see it." Quote, "Does it make any difference if one occupant is a Negro student from Africa?" "You're damn right it does." The telephone receiver crashed down on the cradle. 6 months ago, that conversation took place between a university district real estate agent and myself. Many agents and landlords I talked with gave me the same answer. No N-words. And we printed the N-word. I am a Caucasian.
We've come a long way.
"I am a Caucasian, but I still felt the effects of discrimination. No longer was I accepted as an equal. Suddenly, I was a reject, a bad investment, something to stay away from. This is not an isolated incident. Discrimination comes in at other times, too. Just being in public with a person of another race often draws various indications of disapproval. Some are subtle, some are not. How does it feel to be discriminated against? From my own experiences, I can say it feels like hell." Blah, 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 blah. He goes on to talk about how he was in a restaurant with his friend who was Japanese, mm-hmm. and some drunk guy pointed at him and made offensive comments. So the main thing that kind of stuck out for me in this article, though, was that this was a white author who was talking about how racism impacted him.
Yeah, and I'm sure that this person thought that they were some sort of, like, well-meaning savior when they were writing this, like, oh my god, like, look at me, I'm about to just, like, blow this whole thing wide open, but, like, my eyebrows are raised right now. I know you can't see them, but they're raised right now. Yeah.
Rather than saying, oh, all of these real estate agents refuse to house my black friend, let's talk about his experiences or let's uplift his voice.
A, ridiculous, and also B, just very white, and that makes me really disappointed, to be honest. I don't know. What do you think of this?
I think that, like, if someone came to me and, like, pitched me this story, and I guess, like, granted, it was an editorial, which means that we give guests to the Daily pretty much free range about whatever they want to talk about. But if someone had pitched me this story, it would have been such a red flag that they are trying to talk about, you know, someone else's experiences, or they're trying to make themselves the victim to something that is clearly victimizing other people much more.
It's very white and very male of this author to be like, hey, I can't go to a restaurant, or like, I was impacted by this. Like, who the hell do you think you are? I adore the Daily, but like, looking back at its own history, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, and like, I guess, like, you know, if we gave a random student during the 60s an open slot to talk about race, it could have gone a lot worse.
Yeah, it could have gone a lot worse. But, like, I also really don't like giving prizes in retrospect to people and being like, oh, well, you know, they did the best they could. It's like, I think we've kind of moved beyond that, especially when we're talking about white men, where you just got to be like, guys, you just need to try and do better, and it's all the work's got to come from you. Like, it's not going to be like, oh, well, he tried. Like, oh, like, you know, he could have been, like, super racist. Like, you know.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's great, but, like, you know, we need to do better. Like, there's going to be no prizes for just doing the bare minimum. Like, you can't just set the bar low and just trip right over it and be like, oh, well, like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, you're right.
Thanks for listening to episode 3 of Into the Archives. Our show is produced by me, Claudia Yaw, and The Daily's podcast editor, Billy Featherston. Our theme music is by Mick Gilman. Special thanks to Alec Dietz, Manisha Jha, and Devin McBride.